You are listening to Political Talk with Todd and Todd, frank conversations around business and politics. Here are today's hosts, Todd Schnick and Todd Youngblood.
Welcome back to Political Talk with Todd and Todd. I'm your host, Todd Schnick, joined by my co-host, Todd Youngblood. Todd, we are churning through these interviews that we collected in L.A. last week. How's it going on your end?
Well, I think I've got about five or six to go. So I feel like it's the Union Pacific and the Central Pacific. Because I know I started
at done with their share
the
first.
Beginning of the alphabet. You started with the end, and we're going to crash in the middle somewhere. So
yeah, I got
too bad we're not in Utah.
It's a lot more fun conducting the interviews than it is editing them. Let me tell you that.
It is. Yeah, you don't need to tell me that.
Well, let's get on with today's show. Really excited to meet Representative Scott Holcomb from DeKalb County. Scott, it's wonderful to have you here. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Before we get into a conversation, why don't you take a few minutes and just walk us through a little about you, your background, why you're running, why you're elected. Tell us all about you.
All right. I am a freshman in the legislature in the House of Representatives. I was elected November 2nd of last year, so we're coming up just on 1 year anniversary of the election. I serve on three committees. I serve on the Public Safety Committee, the Defense and Veterans Affairs Committee, and the Children and Youth Committees. And it's been a very interesting experience being down at the Capitol. Aside from that, I live in northeast DeKalb County. My district 82, is roughly from Shalaford Road to Pleasantdale Road east of 85. And so if you know Spaghetti Junction, I basically have the east side of it, north and south. I have a district of about 50,000 people. It extends from the unincorporated part of DeKalb up into Tucker. I think it's a great area. I've lived there since 2004 when I got out of the Army. I was a captain in the Army for 6 years, served 12 years total, 6 years in the Air National Guard while putting myself through college and law school, and then 6 years on active duty. And I deployed three times for Bosnia and then twice after 9/11. And my wife, after not seeing me for the majority of the first 2 years of our marriage, we were married in the summer of 2001, she kindly suggested that I find a new line of work. So I left the service, which was tough to do because I really, really enjoyed serving, and went and moved into the practice of law. I'm a lawyer in terms of my profession. And after I left the service and went into the practice of law, what was really missing was that sense of being part of something bigger than myself. And that's what ultimately drove me to get involved in the public service space, is I think it's really important to get good people involved. We have really challenging issues that we're facing, of course, here in Georgia and also in the United States. And I hope that I can help move us forward in some small way by being involved.
Well, first of all, God bless you for your service to the country. Really appreciative and thankful for that. So thank you for that. Understand you were on CNN over the weekend talking about the president's announcement about pulling troops out by the year. Tell us some of your thoughts and reflections on all that and what that means.
I was. I support the president, and I support the decision for really three reasons. And the first is that the agreement for the withdrawal of troops was actually established under the Bush administration, and it was a hard-fought negotiation, but one that ultimately both the United States and Iraq agreed to. And that agreement said that the United States would withdraw its forces by December 31st of this year. And so withdrawing honors that and it respects that. Secondly, I don't think too many people would disagree that the United States really needs to focus on our own nation building here at home. We have our work to do. You see other countries, particularly in Asia, that are building, they're investing in their infrastructure, and then you travel. Y'all mentioned that you were just in LA. I travel a bit too, and I go to places like New York, and you really see physically the decline of a lot of the infrastructure that we have. Our roads have massive potholes, our buildings are rusting, and so I support nation building here in the United States. I think we really need to focus on that. That's not to say that we completely turn inward. We're still going to play a major role in the world, but I think that the time has come for us to change our focus, and that leads to the last point, which is really that to stay would be to say to the Iraqi people that we don't respect you. And I think that the country is now stable and secure enough for us to be able to withdraw our forces, to respect their desires for the United States to leave, and for us to focus on on a number of other areas. And finally, I think it's a good thing for the troops. As someone who spent three consecutive holidays overseas away from my family, I can tell you there will not be a service member or family member who's disappointed to wake up for Christmas, for New Year's, for any of those holidays, and to be thrilled to be home with their families. It's going to be a really good thing for them, and they deserve it. We've been there for almost 9 years. The war started on March 19th of 2003. I was there. So it's not as if we're withdrawing our forces after a short period of time. We toughed it out, and I'm actually proud of that. There was a lot of debate a few years ago about the surge and whether we should do that, but I think the history is going to look back and probably look favorably upon that decision to really do the hard thing, which was to regroup, refocus our policy, intensify our commitment as opposed to withdraw. And I think that we can really be proud of what's accomplished there. And I hope that it works out. And those are the reasons why I support it.
Representative, do you see any significant risk to our pulling out? And if so, what do we need to be aware of and doing about that?
One of the risks is that you don't know what's going to happen. But that's always a risk with any action that you take in any policy, is you're weighing and balancing the risks and rewards, just as business people do in everyday lives. And so the big risk would be that the country falls into a pattern of violence and chaos that existed from 2005 to 2008 or so, and nobody wants that. And I'm certainly hopeful that the Iraqi security forces can maintain the lid on the country and that they can continue to move forward. Another risk, is which has been highlighted by some of the criticisms, is the risk of Iranian influence. I think that that's maybe overstated, and I think it's overstated because the United States is withdrawing its military, but it's not withdrawing its influence. And my sense is that the space that that influence can really be maintained and even increased is going to be in the political space. And to that end, I think that the withdrawal also favors us. Because if you think about it, if we stayed against the will of the Iraqi people, what would Iran say? Iran would say, the United States doesn't respect the Iraqi people. The United States is overstaying its welcome. And the United States doesn't think that you, Iraqi people, are capable of governing yourselves. So I actually think that it's in our interest to withdraw, because it makes it more or easier for the United States to build greater influence, which we already have strong influence within the Iraqi political space, which is really where things need to go from here.
Well, let's shift to some work that we got to get done here in the U.S. And let's talk about some job growth. I think we all are unhappy that unemployment's a little bit higher in the Metro Atlanta than it is compared to the national average. What are some things that we can do to help incent and grow some economy here locally?
There's a lot that we have to do. Unfortunately, I haven't found a short-term silver bullet. I think that most of the things that we need to do, we're going to need to do and invest for the long haul. Of course, the most obvious of those is education. We need to have a strong, smart, talented workforce that can both continue to compete for the jobs of today, and I think more importantly, the jobs of tomorrow. Your knowledge-based human capital jobs are going to be where the growth is. And so Georgia, we have a world-class higher education system. I used to teach at Georgia Tech, and I was so incredibly impressed by how smart the students are that go there. But we really have our work to do in the K through 12 of getting those students ready for those jobs. And it's disappointing to everybody, regardless of political party, regardless of anything, that the high school graduation rate is a real tragedy. That is a real tragedy. It's something that we need to correct and cure for us to be, I think, a world-class economy, which Georgia wants to do, notwithstanding our whole country wants to, but Georgia wants to be a world-class economy, and that's something that we need to do. The other thing that we need to do is infrastructure. We're going to have a huge debate over that over the next year with the T-SPLOS, which is supposed to come up for a vote next year, and there's some real differences of opinion in terms of where we should go with that. I tend to favor some type of transit options, because as someone who's traveled and spent time both in other places in the United States and around the world, every world-class place that I've been has a great functioning transit system, but I'm sensitive to the costs of that. And so we want to do something that's smart, that's workable, that's really going to enhance us. And our traffic problem is something that's really limiting our economic growth. And it's something that we just need to, I think, devote more attention to and try to come up with some creative solutions. Next thing is energy, education, infrastructure, transportation, energy. Energy is an Achilles heel on the national level. And here in Georgia, it's something that I would like to see a lot more renewable energy initiatives put into place. Something that a lot of other states are doing is they're moving away from the rebates and the credits and those type of incentives towards standards and having a specific percentage of energy that needs to come from renewables. So that way, people who want to be an entrepreneur in this space, you know that you are going to have some business available to you, because it is a requirement that the government or the state itself purchase a certain amount of renewable energy. It's something that is very much a trend towards the majority in most other states. Georgia and other southern states are a little slow to the dance, and I worry that we could be left behind if we don't maybe start changing and get on board with that. Taxes, of course, that's something that's always at the front and center of these debates. Last year, I think, was a little disappointing in that there was a lot of work that was done by the Commission on Tax Reform, but nothing was able to get through the legislature. In fact, candidly, nothing even came to the floor of the legislature. We didn't even have any votes on it. And I think that was a big missed opportunity, because the tax structure that we have now really reflects an economy from 40 or 50 years ago, where it was manufacturing based, and it doesn't reflect the economy that we have today, which is much more service based. And most studies that I've read point to the service sector as being where most of your job growth can take or will likely come from.
Let's turn back real quickly to education. Elected officials and candidates for office are always talking about, we want to improve education, and we're all unhappy that Georgia continues to rank farther back than we would like. What do you think, Representative, what needs to happen to just kind of finally shake this thing loose and start affecting some real change? You ask 10 people, you get 10 different opinions. What do you think is the first thing we've got to do to begin to get a handle on and start building this world-class education? I'm not necessarily talking about higher education. I'm talking about, you know, our elementary schools and middle schools and so on. So how do we get this thing started? What do we have to do?
I don't know all the answers, but I'm certainly studying it and listening to viewpoints from both sides of the aisle, because there is no silver bullet exact answer on education. If there was, we would have found it. But the starting point that I think makes a lot of sense, and there is a lot of agreement in terms of one of the both quickest and long-term investments that you can make to improve education, is quality of teaching. Quality of teaching is always one of the top things that people are pointing to. And I think we pay our teachers way too low. I think 75,000 is where we want to push to try to get our teachers to. Because, and if you use the market incentives analogy, you want to get your best and brightest, and offering very low salaries, that's a disincentive. We want to get our best and brightest, and to get the best and brightest, you have to pay. And I think that while there's, of course, a downside with that, because we're paying more for our teachers, I tend to think that in the long run, we're going to get a lot more out of it. If we can improve our educational system and really get our students to start performing better, then that's a positive across the board. And that's a figure that I didn't just come up with. That's a figure that I learned by spending a lot of time at the schools in my district and asking the very question that you asked me to principals, two teachers, and listening to them, and that was the answer that I got. And
if 75,000 is the goal, the salary goal, what are we at? What's the average pay for a teacher now? I'm just curious.
I think the starting salary is in the high 30s.
Wow.
Or thereabouts. And so, you know, that's in my opinion, we need to do better than that.
Representative Bat, you talked about changing the tax structure a little bit earlier, and as a small businessman and as an individual, that's a topic of great interest. But more specifically, what kind of changes in the tax structure do you support?
I'd like to see, as I mentioned, some changes that reflect the economy as we have it now. I don't know that I rotely say I want to reduce taxes, although that's certainly a great goal. What I want to see is, I don't think that you can discuss tax policy devoid from the other policy issues. And what I mean by that is we need to think through this education piece. We need to think through the infrastructure piece. And if we can get some agreement in terms of where we want to go as the state, we can then set the tax structure with the revenues to match that. And so I don't think that you can or should make these policy decisions by just doing it a piece of the pie at a time. I think that we need to take a very much more collective view of what it is that we want to achieve, get a sense of what that's going to cost, and then set up the tax structure going forward. I do think, generally speaking, that the corporate taxes, and this may be somewhat surprising coming from someone in the Democratic Party, but I think that the corporate taxes probably can be lowered a little bit to make us more competitive. But I do think that there is a role for the tax money to invest in and to make Georgia stronger. It's just that we need to, one, think about what we want to look like. And this is something that I often find to be really concerning being down at the legislature, because I don't see it. I don't know if citizens see it, but I don't see a real sense of a long-term plan of what our leadership in this state wants Georgia to look like 5 or 10 years from now. And I don't see a real move to say this is how we're going to get there. Like, for example, on education, the question that you asked I think is a great one. What do we hear from our leaders every day saying this is how we're going to make a world-class education system? I'm not hearing it. So if I were king for a day, I would be saying the first thing I want to start with is getting teacher salaries up to $75,000. I don't know if we could do it, but I would have something concrete that I would point to and say this is what we want to do to try to achieve that, and work really hard to convince Georgians that this is the right thing to do, and here's why. But overall, tax policy, it needs to be fair, it needs to be sensible, and it needs to be directed at some type of aim or end state, which is going to improve and enhance society.
You mentioned renewable energy a few minutes ago. It sounds to me there's opportunity there for some job growth, some entrepreneurial job growth here in the state of Georgia. Speak more on that subject.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. There is a report that was published by two professors from Georgia Tech and two professors from Duke. And it did an analysis of renewable energy in the Southeast, and it was very bullish on Georgia in particular for wind and for solar. The wind would be much more to the eastern part of where we are, offshore. I used to live in Savannah, so much more for that part of the state. But for here in Atlanta and other parts of the state, the solar space is really promising. There's already a lot of entrepreneurs who are working on solar energy. I spoke at a conference for them this summer. I just think that it's the right thing to do on so many levels, and it's one of those policy choices that you just think about it, and it's hard to find any downside. It makes sense for us as a country because it helps, gives us more domestic energy capacity, takes us off of our reliance on, among other things, foreign oil, which most of the countries from which we receive foreign oil tend not to be our friends. So I think that that's a good thing. And it's good for the environment because it doesn't have the emissions like the carbon producing materials do. And it's something that can be homegrown. So many of the other energy sources that we use have to be imported, extracted from foreign places, whereas this is something that we can make right here. And I want to see it work. And I'm very supportive of trying to set the policy conditions so that way entrepreneurs can be encouraged to go and invest in these type of businesses. And one thing that I think that we can do is set renewable portfolio standards. It's something that's been done around the country and other states, and it's something that I think would really help drive some strong business growth in this area.
Representative, before the show, you used a term, and you probably saw the question marks pop up above both our heads, and that term was e-recycling. What the heck is that?
E-recycling is, it's important. It is, I'm looking down at our desk here, and I see a BlackBerry. I have my cell phone. There's a flip camera phone. E-recycling is all of these technology gadgets that we have, an iPad. They're wonderful, and they have so improved our lives. But what's the shelf life on any of these products?
A couple of years at most.
You think back at laptops now, or your monitor screens. They're really thin these days. Not too long ago, they looked like small televisions. All these things, they get turned over, and they go into landfills. And it's a horrible, horrible waste, because a lot of the components within them can be reused and should be reused. And I'll tell you why. They contain precious metals, and these things can easily be recycled, put together in new products. And on a broader level for our foreign policy, you may have heard the issues surrounding precious metals. And China has a lot of precious metals. The United States has less access to them. But a lot of these devices that we use in the or these electronic gadgets, they have these precious metals. And so it seems to me we shouldn't just be throwing these things out. We should be safeguarding them, reusing them, and it's smart policy. It's also smart policy because just to put them in landfills or to get rid of them is bad for the environment. There's toxic aspects to them, and so if they're not recycled, these can go into the ground, affect our water, which Georgia, of course, has issues with its water, so we want to keep what water we have clean so that way we can use it. And it can create jobs. There is a lot of job growth possibility within this area. And I have a bill that's been drafted on e-recycling. South Carolina has a bill on it. Texas has a bill on it. If you go up north, they have much more stringent requirements. But I'd like to see Georgia at least get over the hurdle and get into this area, because I think it is an area that we can have some growth, and businesses want it. I've been going around and talking to the e-recycling businesses here in Georgia, and they want there to be some type of law, because those that do it correctly, they want the business, and they know that there are other people out there that don't know what they're doing, that aren't doing it properly, and that's not good for anybody. So those who are really legitimate and professional, they want there to be some type of structure and policy within Georgia, so that way they can benefit from it.
Well, I want to thank you, Representative, because you made me feel like total crap, because I've contributed an awful lot of computers and monitors and laptops into the landfills. How is it?
You ought to see some of the monitors that I've had to dispose of over the years.
Well, you're old, so you, I'm sure you have some of those big monitors that he's talking about.
I still have some.
I bet you do. How is it done? What level of government manages that? I mean, do you put a computer monitor on the side of the street and DeKalb County picks it up? I mean, how do you think this thing works? Or can you get tax incentives for you? I get a tax incentive for donating clothes to Goodwill. Can something like that be done for these kinds of pieces of equipment?
There's a lot of different ways that you can try to skin the cat, and I've been trying to come up with the best ways. I think the bill that I drafted is probably going to just be the starting point of the conversation, not the end of the conversation, because there are a lot of different ways that you can go about it. The way that I view it is actually not to have the government be terribly involved. It won't be like the roadside recycling that we have in DeKalb County. It would be that you can't just put this into the landfills. And so here are companies that do it, and you have to bring it to these companies, or to have the manufacturers take back these products so that way they can reuse them. And so then they're coming up with a system by which they can use it, and you have end user responsibility. And it's like a circle where you have the manufacturer make it, goes to the consumer, and then it goes back to the manufacturer, who then reuses it and uses it to make a new product that can then be used and sold to the consumers again. So ultimately, that's where I'd like to get that developed. And there's a lot of different ideas on how to do it. One is for the manufacturers to allow customers to mail the products back, and others would have drop-offs at these places that do it. And generally speaking, the companies accept the products for free, because they get paid by then selling the component parts. They break them down and make money off of the metals that are contained therein. And so it's kind of a win-win for everybody. It keeps it out of our landfills or polluting our water and everything else.
Representative, we're about out of time, but one final question. Let's look ahead to 2012 a little bit. Republicans are going through the process to determine a nominee. The president's gearing up his reelection. He's struggling with some lower poll numbers, but he's probably going to raise $1 billion. How do you see the 2012 presidential race shaping up, and how do you think it's going to turn out?
It'll be really interesting. I think a lot of it is going to have to do with who the Republican nominee is. Sure. And that's been a really fascinating campaign. I'm really surprised, I'll admit it honestly, that Herman Cain is doing so well. When he first started, as someone who had never held elected office and was in the single digits for a really long time, to now be the front runner by a lot of polls is really fascinating. I think ultimately, though, if I'm going to make a prediction, my prediction would be that Mitt Romney is probably going to be the nominee. I think the Republican Party is kind of coalescing around him, and you've seen Perry, unless he can really turn around, fall really precipitously, and it's hard to see him coming back. And I think it's going to be close. The president, who won pretty overwhelmingly back in 2008, I think he's got his work cut out for him, and it's going to be a real challenge. So since I'm part of his party, I'll say that I think that the president's going to win, but I think that it's going to be a tough fight. And it will really be interesting to see what happens here in Georgia. Obama's campaign manager, in his first interview with the New York Times, mentioned Georgia, which certainly caught my eye. And I didn't know if that was just a head fake or if that was something real. And the more that I'm hearing about it is that they may actually try to make it something real. And that makes sense, because he may not win Virginia like he won Virginia last time. He may not win North Carolina like he won North Carolina last time, and some of the also Midwest states. So he's going to have to pick up some states, and maybe Georgia's a place where he'll try to compete.
He's pretty tight with Mayor Reed.
He is.
So, I mean, that may be some connection with pinning that relationship.
He is. There's that, and then the sense that the state's demographics are changing, and that Democrats can be competitive on a statewide basis. And I think that there's some truth to that, because he earned 47.5% of the vote, I think, in 2008. And if memory serves correctly, that was only a couple hundred thousand votes. And I know only a couple hundred thousand votes. But in a state of almost 10 million people, with the right message, with the right organization, it's possible. I will say I think it's unlikely, but I think it's possible.
It's certainly going to be interesting.
Yes. Yep.
Representative Scott Holcomb of Georgia's 82nd District, it was a real pleasure having you. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thanks.
Before we let you go, quickly share with the audience how they can get in touch with you and learn more about you and your work.
Okay. My website is www.votescottholcomb. I'm on Twitter at Rep. Scott Holcomb. Email address, which you're welcome to write to me, is scott@repscottholcomb as well. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks again for your service to the country.
Thank you.
Appreciate All right, it. That wraps this episode. On behalf of Todd Youngblood, I'm Todd Schnick. We'll see you next time on Political Talk with Todd and Todd.